Session number 17626, Mr. Thomas Lawton, Reel 2.
Mr. Lawton, Reel 2. Your childhood again, Mr. Lawton, that we're talking about. How did you occupy your time, your playtime, your leisure time?
Well, there were two types of entertainment. There was what were called pastimes and what were called games. Games were played outside. Pastimes were usually played in the house, such as Ludo, Snakes and Ladder, etc. But games, which we played, they were all pretty physical. For instance, we used to play a game called Mount a Kitty, Leapfrog, Panky, Knocky Nine Doors, Tub Tipping. Everybody had a water tub standing at the door. And because we were brilliant lads, we used to pull the water tub up against the back door and knock at the door, so that when they opened it, the water all went at the door. So Tiggy was a normal game. Pull you over the pot, would have a hat or something, or a tin block, get in the ring, and you pulled each other to pull across. And when you got pulled across, you had to stand by until the team got diminished. So that all the time, we were running the streets, climbing up the drain pipes, going over the top of the roof and down the other side. And there was one very dangerous game, which we didn't realise how dangerous it was at the time. But you see, there was a wagon way ran alongside where we lived, and the wagons used to come up, about six wagons in a set, strong hauler rope, and they were hauled from the colliery right across the level crossings in Burnley, right across the top up onto the Black Fells. When those wagons, when that engine was standing, the rope was lying flat on the bottom, and we used to say, right, watch it then. And as soon as it starts to take the strain, we shall lie on the rope, hang on, belly flap on the rope, hang on, so that the rope would carry us away with it. But about every 20 yards, there was a roller over which the rope passed. And what you had to do was to be able to roll off that rope before your hands went on the roller or you smashed your hands. And we used to get cheers by the policeman and all this. Who knew your name? This was a big thing. He didn't have to catch you, he knew your name. And when you went home, your father would say, right, PC so-and-so's been here. What have you been up to? Oh, well, keep away from here. Another game was walking the walls. There was always plenty of walls, stone walls, and we used to walk them in with bare feet. There was one place you could walk, after, I think we'd walk 500 yards at very least on these walls. And while on one side the drop was only about 6 feet, when you came to the bridge, it was a 20-foot drop, and we used to walk over the narrow parapet in our bare feet. There were things that we never thought of as kids. Eh? So marbles, all the different games of marbles, all the different kinds of tops, throwy tops, whipping tops. And each game was played slightly different in different places, because the game came down by word of mouth. Unlike Ludo and that, which were pastimes and you read the rules, it came down by word of mouth. So even in a village, you could have two parts of the village playing the same game, slightly different. But he said that was the way to play it. Right? And consequently, my father once said to me, I want you to join the choir. The choir? Yes. Curate Butterworth said he heard you singing among some of the lads, and you've got a lovely voice. And my father's aim in life was to get me into the hidden choir at Durham Cathedral. See? So I started going for choir practice. I went for 3 or 4 weeks of choir practice, and I left because of the foul language which was being used by the choir boys. Now, when I started work, I wanted to go down the pit. Oh, the father said, you're going to be a joiner. So he sent us to a little old colliery where there were older men and they didn't use foul language. And when he said to me, the curate Butterworth says you're not attending choir practice. No, I said, I left. Why? I says, Father, because of the foul language. Foul language? Yes. He says, good lad. Never stay where there's foul language. He says, because that is a sign of weakness and it's a sign of evil. And do you know, when I started down in the pits, the deputy could send you out of the pit if you use foul language. And when a lot of people talk about pitmen and that, there was a lot of what we call holy pitmen. There were mostly chapel men. And they could play the organ and all that kind of thing. So our games, as I say, were very physical. Lasses certainly didn't play with lads. They couldn't keep up. We ran the streets, we climbed over the housetops, we walked the walls, we rode on the hauler ropes. We played the normal games. And the one where it was spitty, you know, where you had to spit over each other, they were caught, they'd say. But never, as a matter of fact, somewhere I have a poem, little poem which I wrote. We lived in a place called Warwick Square. It was a very old place. And the back doors all faced each other. And in the centre of the square, you had middens, what were called netties, and big middens and cesspools. And when I was 12 years old, I know I was 12 because it was 1918 and the war had just finished, I wrote a little poem to it, and it went like this. I've always remembered it. Oh, Warwick Square, oh, Warwick Square, the sight of you doth turn my hair. Your middens, they are full of it, and we get stuck up where'er we sit. If only you were thoroughly cleaned out, and old Tom Potter would stop blowing his snout, then would I be with pleasure full, but alas, thou art a mucky hole. And when my sister Connie died, about 5 years ago, the week before she died, I was this year at home, she says, Tom, I can still remember that little poem you wrote about Warwick Square. I can, she said, I can. And she did. And I wrote another poem about playing in the streets. I can't remember it. I've got it written down somewhere. And I finished up by saying, so we ran and we jumped and we fought and we climbed the doors and that, from morn till night. But there was nothing more we wanted than that which we had, a mother, a good old dad, and a home and a bed, brothers, sisters, father, mother, good old dad, and a bed to go to. And when we went to bed, you know, we went unwashed, you know. And in the shower that we'd been running about all day.
You mentioned inter-village rivalry. Did you get up to raiding different villages as young boys?
Yes. Stone fights. Yes. One of the finest games we ever played was very military. Stone fights. And we used to fight on the slag heaps. In Burtley at that time, there was any more big slag heaps. The slag had come from the foundries of the Burtley Ironworks. And the new towners would fight the Warwick Squarers, the Warwick Squarers would fight the Pyrrhus Terraces. All different people came from different places. And the idea was to drive each other off the slag heaps. So the people that got there first got the highest hill, and they gathered any amount of stones, and you had to attack. And of course, if they had bigger men than you, they could hoy half bricks. And that was regular. Down the slag heaps for a stone fight. And we threw stones. We all got hoyers of stones. And that was a regular do. Very, very competitive, because the new towers fancied themselves best. They had big Bob Fuller, where Bob Fuller was daft. And he would throw a full brick. But you see, we also had blokes as big as Bob. And we went down what they called the tail, that was the wagon way, on a Saturday and a Sunday. And providing that the pitch and toss men weren't there, throwing the pennies, we could carry on our fight. But if the pitch and toss men were there, no chance. Yes, that was a very important game. Stone fights.
There must have been some injuries.
Yes. And you know, there was injuries other than that, you see, because nearby was the pit heaps. And on the pit heap, there was always a tubway, and maybe a tram of a tub. Now, one bloke I knew very well, two or three of them went onto the pit heap, and they got the tram of the tub, and they got on it, and they were riding down, and he fell off. He lost an arm. It cut his arm off. There was always somebody drowning in the pit ponds. In the winter time, the ice wasn't breaking up, and the kids were going down, they went. We learned to swim in the pit ponds, in the clay hole ponds. Wasn't any bass. And the clay hole pond was dangerous because it went like that, you see. The pit pond was more even. When we used to go gathering coal, we used to bring the coal across from a pit heap on a flat raft that we made. And the raft was about 4 inches under the water with a bag of coal on the top, coming across a pit pond, you know. But we never seemed to think. Well, as kids, you don't think. We got chased a lot, but never spoil our fun.
What, did sport come into your
yes.
life?
Yes. Boxing especially. Running, jumping. I loved running. Long distance, when I say long distance, we call ourselves harriers. We'd run 4 or 5 miles. But boxing, I loved boxing. And without any bragging, I was the heavyweight champion of our division, although I was never a heavyweight. No? And my father once promised he would take me to Lowfell, to Gaysett, to a publican Gaysett, who had a boxing school, but he never did. But I was a street fighter. Oh, I've had any more fights on the streets, coming out the pubs and that, you know. But in those days, it was general, if you had an argument in a pub, you settled it next day on the slag heaps or up the fields, stripped to the waist. Even in the Royal British Legion, men would argue, right on. And one very special fight I saw and enjoyed, two men in the Legion got on arguing, so somebody said, wait, get it, knock it out with bare fists. So we all went out the Legion, down behind the houses, and both men stripped off to the waist, and they sparred up, and they sparred up, and they circled round each other, and they sparred up, and somebody says, "Why, how are we then? Somebody hit somebody." And one of the men says, "Oh, why, if I hadn't been gassed," and the other one says, "Why, if I didn't have a dicky heart, mind." And the point was, nobody struck anybody, they put their shirts on, we all went back to the Legion, and we had a good drink. And you see, that was all part of life.
What are you were 8 years old when the war First World War started. What are your own personal memories of the...
Of the First World War? My first memories of the First World War was the fact that we were going to fight the Germans. The Germans. I heard men in the pub talking about going to fight the Germans. And you see, the best mouth organs you could get were made in Germany. And I was very worried. If we got to fight against the Germans, we'll not be able to get any German mouth organs. Eh? Another thing is about the First World War, the columns and columns and columns of men killed, missing, killed, wounded, missing, believed dead. And you see, that meant, good Lord, hundreds of thousands of men being killed in one day. We didn't know what it was, the Battle of the Somme. And when the men had been kitted up, that there was nothing to worry about, there was no enemy across there, they had been flattened with this barrage of heavy artillery for days. And they were told to walk across, kick a ball if necessary, smoke a pipe. There's nobody there, can't be anybody there, after the batting they've had. And what they didn't know was that the Germans had just moved back a few paces and dug in. And I remember reading an article by a German gunner who said he couldn't believe it. They walked across and he just mowed them down like wheat in a field. And that's when they introduced that old saying, lions led by donkeys.
What was the effect upon your own local community? Because many men must have been killed and disappeared.
My brother Billy was in the territorials, and I should carry his rifle from must have taken the rifles home then. I should carry his rifle down to the drill hall in Burtley. And on one occasion, I went to see him off at the train, and I cried because I thought he was going to the war. That's when they went to Conway Camp in 1914, and they came back, and they were embodied, and they all became soldiers. My brother Billy's photo was in that passage, sitting on a horse. He was in the transport, 1914-15. He's sitting on a horse down at South Shields. Interesting thing, my brother Billy came home with a sergeant on the horses. They came in through the back gate, across the backyard, into the back kitchen, and out the front door, just to be daft. But Billy's horse stopped in the middle of the front room and dropped a pail of dung right on the middle of the rug in front of the fire. Oh, yes. One family at Portobello, they were Catholics. Oh, I can't think. It was an Irish name. Four sons and a husband in the First World War. And the husband and one son, they were on leave, and they were killed by a bus or something at the Ballymore pub. The others were killed in the trenches. Punky Corbett, sailor, he was killed with the recoil of the gun on the boat. And I know exactly where his grave is now, up in the old churchyard. Then, of course, the Belgians came here. And that's why I've got a lot of relatives in Belgium. My sister married one of the Belgians. And I have relatives in Belgium. I can go there any time. And that's why I went there in 1930 and got a job.
The casualties, as you have been saying, were very, very high indeed. Can you recall the postman arriving with the telegrams at all in the village?
Yes. Postwoman. I can nearly remember her name. What? A postwoman? Aye. In the sheriff uniform, you know, the hat. Yes, and she was seen regular going to different houses. And with it being a village, they said, yes, she's gone to so-and-so. Like Granny Bland's or anybody else who's gone there. Bad news for somebody. Bad news. And then you'll get no vote later on. But there was something about those days that were different in so much as casualties, yes. But you see, the most important thing was the military funeral. And every day there was a military funeral in Burtley. And when we were at school, we could hear the thump of the big drum, you know. But what we couldn't understand is, when they've taken that man to the grave after the funeral, they play the dead march, go out there, and when it's over, they play a sprightly march, and everybody marches away looking happy, maybe go for a pint. And as kids, we used to say, it's funny, that, isn't it? Of course, when you got older, you realised, well, that is a drill. With the Belgians coming here, in Burtley, they built what they called Elizabethville. It was a self-contained village, just stood down there, to accommodate at least 6,000 Belgians, men, women and children. In 1914, everybody said the war will be finished by spring of 15. By 1915, they knew that the Germans were hammering us right, left and centre. We were even rationing shells at the front. So Lloyd George and company got together and said, hey, converted ordinary factories to munition factories, and they built in Burtley two, there's one there, they built two what they called projectile factories. That's one there, the other one's further along. And these projectile factories were okay, but they didn't have the men to man them. Ah, well, in England at that time, there were about 450,000 Belgian refugees in different parts of the country. Among them, there were skilled men. Yes, but the British government got together with the Belgian government. The Belgian government's army was practically finished. And they agreed to release 1,000 skilled men from the armed forces of Belgium to come to Bertley to man one of those projectile factories. The Belgians came. At that time, my father once again had moved into a fish and chip shop. And the authorities went round here because the place wasn't ready for these Belgians. They were practically all single men. And the casernes, or the barracks that they called them, weren't ready for them. And they took over a place which we called the skating rink. We had an ice rink in Burnley. They took that over as an arcade. But the authorities went round to different people in Burnley and said, how many Belgians can you take to feed? My father said, six. Right. Now they'll come for the food during the daytime. Mm-hmm. And they'll not bother you. No. They came all right. They were there all day. They were helping to clean the taties. They were gutting the fish. They were carrying stuff in. And at 9 o'clock at night, my mother would shout us in. And we would climb a lamppost and run across the top of the middens, you know. And there was one Belgian there, Oscar. I remember Oscar. He used to come tearing after us, climb up the lamppost, catch us and take us back in. And the time came when they did actually have their own places, but they never forgot. And they used to come regular to visit us. At the time, my father and my uncle Tommy had 350 rabbits, breeding rabbits. The Belgians loved rabbits. They loved cats. Bertley said they were eating cats. We said, no, they loved cats as pets. And my father used to sell the Belgian rabbits. But he was a good man, my father, because you see, for the cost of the rabbit, he would skin it for them and gut it for them. Good. So the Belgians didn't always get the rabbit they picked out. They got one that my father didn't want. And they weren't very popular. They were not allowed to go into the pubs. There were policemen on the gates, Belgian gendarmes, who were so severe, even the Belgians asked, could we have a British bobby on and all, just to soothe things on. And as a lad, 10-year-old, I had a paper round, and I used to go into the huts, I had a special pass, and I used to go around selling newspapers in the Belgian colony. And my sister, Dolly, fell in love with one of the lads, John Louis, from Brussels. And they got married, and it is from them that I have all these Belgian relatives today who come here, and I go across there. But the most horrible thing is that while they had a Belgian colony, and self-contained, own fire services, own police services, they even had the open water tank for firefighting, they also had the schools and the church, all Belgian personnel. Aye. 13 Belgians died in uniform while they were here. Because they all wore uniform for quite a long time. They were still under Belgian military orders. And so we had 13 Belgian graves in one part of that cemetery, the Belgian cemetery. Uh-huh. The Belgians went away. Well, the Belgians are naturally Catholics, so it became a Catholic cemetery, see? Became overgrown and neglected. But there was 13 graves there, headstones, with a plate that big, brass or bronze, with all particulars of that man. Where he was born, when he was born, his rank in the army, the brigade he belonged to, decorations which he wore. And the time came when somebody went in and vandalised that place. They tore the Belgian colours off the doors. And they tore those brass plates off. So all they had was just bare stone standing. Well, at that time, I was very annoyed. I went down, looked, I took photographs of it. I sent photographs of it to the papers. I wrote about it. And somebody said, well, There's somebody getting paid for that, you know. I said, yes, somebody getting paid for looking after them. But who? Eh? The Wargraves Commission was paid. I went down one day, and there was a van standing, and there was two men in the cemetery, and had a pile of plates, name plates, off the gravestones. I said, where'd you get them? From the Catholic priest. I said, where do you get them? From the police. Where'd the police get them? From a scrap man in Gateshead. Those people tore those plates off with all that information on and took it to a scrap man. And everybody knew who they were, and there was nothing ever done about it. So I said to these chaps who were down there, you got the plates, yes? Only one fault. What, we don't know which plate belongs to which. You don't, no? Well, I said, there's only 13 stones. And I says, militarily, you start there, clockwise. We even call window panes clockwise. Aye, we start there, but which plate? Well, I said, the plate will have a number on it. Well, I turned the plate over, was any motor numbers on? Oh, I says, hey, you're in trouble. But I says, hold on. The Wargraves Commission will have a plan of this place. They said, we are the Wargraves Commission. Well, I says, you're in trouble. How do you mean? There are two classes of Belgium. There's a Walloon and a Flamse. Aye. And I says, if perchance you put a Flamse plate on a Walloon's grave and any of the relatives come across, they'll blow the place up. What? Today, those 13 stones are laid flat in another part of the cemetery. They built a little ramp up, laid them flat. They've got all the plates and name plates and everything else. The original graves, overgrown, forgotten. When one of my mates, Belgian relatives, came here, I said, come on, I'll show you something. I'll show you gravestones lying down. The men never laid down, the men stood up. We went and saw them, and they were disgusted. And every November, Armistice Day, I used to go down to those gravestones with one little poppy, and I used to stick it in a little crevice, and that's the only person that ever went down to see all those dead Belgian gravestones. Right? They're still there today, but they'll be covered up with ashes and all kinds of things.
Why was there so much hatred against them? Was it because they were foreigners? Or?
Yes. Plus the fact, the people in Burnley at that time had dirt mittens. They were still using oil lamps in places. From 1910 they had gas because Burnley produced its own gas in 1910. So your street lights were gas. But the majority of people just had the gas or the oil lamp. And they just had community taps, right? In the Belgian huts, electric light. A cold water tap in the doors, see? And they were very comfortable little huts. And the men who were working in the ordnance factory or projectile factory were getting more pay than the pitmen were getting. So, a Belgian woman could come out with a basket. They never bothered coming in Burnley much, but they would walk way up the roads, maybe to a farm, and they could afford to buy eggs, etc., etc. The English women were rationed at the shops and they didn't have the money to throw about, see. They weren't allowed to go to the pubs. The forest they were allowed to travel was, I think it was the gates at the yon end of Low Fell. They had to carry their passes. Everybody came out of there, had to have a pass to show the gendarmerie. I had a pass to show the English bobby. And it was always that. But there was nearly a mutiny down there because of the gendarmes being so stupid. And the crowd gathered at the gendarmerie. And one of the gendarmes must have lost his head and he fired a rifle or a revolver and he hit a little laddie. And they were going to burn the hoods down. They got it calmed down, but I learned then that in Catrick there was a battalion standing ready to move up to take over the hoods to quell the mutiny. It was a mutiny battalion.